Okay, so I'm gonna look at some of the questions showing up in the Etherpad we got here. It says, have you considered using a CRDT to share buffers between threads and merge any concurrent edits automatically? So I have looked at that. And the problem with CRDTs is that even though they give you a mathematically correct answer when you're trying to merge two conflicts, it's not always a useful answer. Like it's not coherent. If you have two things trying to edit the same thing, there's no good way to resolve that. And so they really work well when you have two people working live, both editing the same document, because they can fix any particular issues like that, like you would with Google Docs. But you have different packages that aren't aware of each other, you're going to run into problems. And so this is something, if you read from the Xi editor, which was one of the first ones to use CRDTs, in the retrospective, he talks about how they had this problem where the CRDTs, they give you an answer, but it's not always an answer that's useful. And so I feel like locks at least are going to make it's not going to be as efficient if you have a whole bunch of packages, but I don't imagine there's going to be a ton of those. It can actually, I think it'll be more useful in practice. My host on GitHub, because that's what I know. If there's a way to host it on somewhere else, I'd be interested in doing that. If you're interested in sending patches without using GitHub, you could always send an email. I'm more than happy to accept email patches. Do you think it's possible to achieve with the current Emacs code? I do. I think you can do that. Like I said, there's a couple things inside there that are intentional breaks with existing Emacs code. And some of those being like functions are immutable, as well as having data shared, switched between different threads, which means there's going to be some copying going on. So there's going to be subtle things that are going to be different. And we've really got to think about those intentionally. But I'm really going for bug compatibility with GNU Emacs so that you can take an existing ELIS package and just run it and it just works. Because I think that's one of the big strengths of the Emacs ecosystem is the millions of lines of ELIS that people have written. So I'm not, okay, so it says you're re-implementing ELISP in Rust. Have you considered using a more modern Lisp such as Scheme? So I'm not re-implementing ELISP in Rust. I'm re-implementing the C in Rust. In fact, I would like to make more of the core that's written in C in ELISP instead of C or Rust, because then it's actually introspectable. There's a talk by Tom Tromey that he gave a while ago about Emacs should be Emacs Lisp. And I kind of like that philosophy that as much of it as should be ELISP as possible. And we should only have C or Rust or some systems level language for really low level stuff. Using a more modern Lisp such as Scheme. I mean, there's two talks, I think, in this conference about using Scheme inside Emacs. And I looked at this at one point about what if you wrote it inside Common Lisp, because that also has some really low level details. And then you could go from ELIS down to Common Lisp. But the problem is under the hood, you still need a systems language. You still need either C or Rust or something underneath the Common Lisp to implement the primitives. And so it's not going to give you just two languages. You'll have three. You'll have the ELISP, Common Lisp, and C under the hood. And so in this case, we just have the two. We have the ELISP and the Rust. All right, that's all the questions I see there. Let me go look at chat. Okay, so I see into the chat. Specific features from the Rust compiler that are missing that way you would take advantage of. Oh, that is a great question. There's a handful of them. I should have written down a list of these. One of them is Polonius, which is the new borrow checker. Because we're trying to use lifetime to track our objects, we often run into situations where we've kind of got to hack around things because limitations with the borrow checker. And so I have a whole bunch of like notes inside there about where a better Polonius would help inside there and help ease some of the issues. Another thing is enum variants as types, because right now we have an object which is defined as a big enum that had all the possible objects. But if we want to have a subset of those objects or just pass in one of those objects, we got to define a new struct. And so we have a whole bunch of boilerplate code to define that all out. And if we had variants as types, that would make the code a lot easier. Another one is the allocator API. Right now we're kind of working around it, But ultimately, we're going to need our own allocator. And the allocator API is still nightly only. So there's a couple more. I'll look at that more, but that's a great question. Let's see. Okay.
I see a question you might not have noticed, just asking about reuse of Remax.
Oh, yes. So I have reused some of Remax code and some taken, like I mentioned, taken some of their ideas, but ultimately we're using a different model because under the hood in Remax, everything is just defined as an opaque external type that's defined inside Emacs. And so it just pulls those in, interacts with those and passes them back into C. And so we're trying to see what we can do if we say, okay, we're not going to take the same. So they're bound to the implementation details of Emacs, and we don't want to do that. And so we've re-implemented all the core types ourselves. And so that means that we can't just take the Remax code one for one and use it in our project, but we can take a lot of their ideas. And I've spent some time reading through their documentation, different things about how they approached strings and GC and different stuff like that. Looks like all the questions. Okay, so another question, what are your thoughts on the GUI layer? Any plans on how to re-implement it? So this is something I've thought a lot about, but I still don't have a solid plan for. I'm not really a GUI person. I mostly work with low level. And so my two thoughts is you can go the GTK route. There's Rust bindings for that. That's well understood. It's got good support. But there's also some interesting projects to try and do GUI in Rust, native Rust, and have it use Rust idioms and stuff like that. And so those are things like Druid, and there's eGUI and a bunch of those that are that way. And I've never used one of them, but I'd be interested to try that out first and see how well does this work and how well supported is this doing a Rust first GUI. If money could fix the problem, how much would it cost to ship this with feature parity before 2026? Ooh, in a year. That's a good question. Even if we had the money, it would take more than just me, even if I was working on it full time. I don't know. That's a good question. I would think it would take a team of at least a handful of people to get this shipping within 1 year. Because there's still a lot of work to do. And even once you have everything implemented, there's a lot of bug finding and smoothing it out so that it runs as well as Emacs, which has been, you know, battle tested for a long time. Okay.
So this might be a good moment for me to break in and just say that we've got about 10 minutes left before we resume new talks on both tracks. Of course, we're happy to keep this chat open and keep the recording going here, which we'll share after the conference, as long as there's discussion here.
Thank you. GTK project has automatic binding with a framework called GObject Introspection, which is what I'm using for Gypsum project. Probably Rust has a GObject implementation, which you can use. Yeah, I know it has some GTK bindings. I'm not sure if it's specifically GObject, but that's a good path because I feel like the problem with the Rust GUIs is that they're all very new. And so, you know, everything works in a demo, but you need something that can work across all different devices and all different platforms and have really good support and good accessibility and stuff like that. All right, ELISP is implemented in C. So if you're not implementing ELISP in Rust, you're using keeping the C implementation of ELISP. So let me see if I can do a better job of explaining this. So inside Emacs, you have about a million lines of ELISP. And underneath that, you have the C, which is the primitives everything's implemented in. And so we're keeping all of the ELISP, and we're just taking that C layer and replacing it with Rust. And so when you call a built-in function, it's calling into a Rust function instead of a C function under the hood. So all the ELISP stays ELISP, but the C becomes Rust.
So looking at the IRC chat, it feels to me like maybe there's a little bit of confusion around what do we mean when we say rewriting ELISP in Rust, right? I think there are some people that are like, hey, we're reinventing ELISP. And there's other people that are like, no, we're trying to be byte for byte compatible with Rust. So you know, some people are like questioning your no answer on that. Aren't you really, maybe is what I'm reading in there. Do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about how I can make this clearer. So the ELISP stays ELISP. We're not changing the ELISP at all, or at least very minimally. We want to be able to take, like I said, bug compatible. So whatever works inside existing Emacs, you can take all the LISP and you can run it in Rune and it works the same. So the ELISP stays the same. It's just the under the hood core that is getting replaced. And this in turn adds some new features such as multi-threading. So it's not exactly compatible, but you should be able to use your existing code and the ELISP will stay ELISP.
So the idea is that anything that I've written as an Emacs user, my config, my custom packages, whatever it may be, that's all going to be valid code. If you take, you know, the ELISP implementation as being the C code and the parts of ELISP written in ELISP that represent opportunity space, thinking about Rust as an implementation language, okay, fine. You know, you can make a semantic argument. Okay, we're re-implementing, we're creating an alternate implementation of ELISP. But what ELISP is, isn't the problem space here. That's a fixed, a given, if you will. Is that all right?
That's a good way of saying it.
Okay. Yeah, what you said makes sense. I was kind of responding to some comments, like I'm not sure it connected for everybody. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how much I needed to expand on that and explain that, but I appreciate you jumping in. Okay, sorry if I were discussing, but what will your Rust implementation also be able to run Emacs bytecode or the implemented the listable? So I already have a bytecode interpreter inside there that runs the existing ELISP bytecode. And so that was one of the first things I did was bootstrap the interpreter and then bootstrap the bytecode engine. And so we compile, we use the, because the bytecode compiler is written in Emacs Lisp. And so you bootstrap that and it gives you the Emacs bytecode. And so I have a bytecode engine that runs the bytecode. So that's already done. And you could potentially on top of that, do something like the native compilation or a JIT. But we have both an interpreter and a bytecode compiler.
And I'll just break in one more time to say, with about 5 minutes left in our live time with this Q&A session, which we're happy to keep going. As long as there are questions coming up in 5 minutes, we'll have a talk on color on the Gentat track. And then right here, we'll have the PSearch talk.
Thank you. Is it possible to bootstrap with just the bytecode interpreter? So I'll have to put in a link to one of my blog posts. So that was my original idea, was to say, I don't want to have an interpreter, a bytecode interpreter, and a native compiler. I want to just have just one. So I'm only going to have the bytecode. And so that's what I did initially. The problem with that is that a bunch of the early bootstrap Emacs code is written with the assumption that it's going to be interpreted. This is especially true with macros, where you'll have a function defined, you'll evaluate part of the function. The other half of the function has macros in it that are not defined yet, but it doesn't matter because they don't get used. But with the bytecode interpreter, it expands all macros when it gets the function definition. And so those weren't macros when the function was expanded, and therefore they got instantiated as functions, but they're not functions, they're macros. And so I initially spent a bunch of time trying to work around this, trying to move code around, work stuff around, refactor the code to try and get it to work with only bytecode interpreter. And eventually I just gave up and said, you know what? I'm just going to write an actual interpreter to handle this, because trying to handle all these lazy macros is too much work. And everything in the Bootstrap is built with the assumption that you have lazy macro expansion. Because I'm guessing the Emacs bytecode interpreter isn't complete. So it's mostly complete. There's a handful of opcodes that aren't implemented that are pretty easy to add that I haven't run into. And there's some of them that are deprecated that aren't implemented, but it's essentially complete. We also provide a bytecode JIT compilation via libgcc the way Emacs currently does it. Eventually I would like to. I'm more inclined to have a proper runtime JIT than an ahead of time compiler like libgcc, like the current Emacs native compilation, because it allows you to take type information and actually apply that to the code, which can let you do more aggressive optimizations to it. Said we may either get a new Emacs with an ancient C core with a modern Lisp, or an Emacs with modern core but stuck with ancient ELisp. So there was another project I was talking to, one of the Guile implementations, about how we could potentially, he was like, what would it take to bootstrap Guile in Rune, where you have both, you could have ELisp and Guile running inside this project. And so we've started that discussion, which I think would be interesting. But it's tricky too, because fundamentally, ELisp and Guile are two different languages. They have different semantics. They have different ways of handling things. So you've really got to consider both of those when you're trying to make them work together. How would you do the native module system? What would be different? We can do the same thing. We have an FFI. So, I haven't looked into it a ton, but I feel like it could be similar. And I'm actually interested, there's a couple projects on GitHub right now to have an FFI written in ELisp. So you don't even need to create a separate C or Rust module, because you can actually write native modules in Rust or C. And so you can just have direct bindings to a C FFI written in ELisp. You don't need any C code inside there. And I think that would be an interesting approach to look at as well. Oh, Raman, yeah, that's right. We were talking about that, about bootstrapping scheme.
And at this point, we have broken away from this talk, but we're continuing to record, and this will all be published. I'd say go ahead and keep going as long as you'd like in here. And thanks once again for the awesome discussion.
Thank you so much. So I'll just pay attention to the Etherpad and the chat and see.
That sounds good. I'll keep an eye on IRC, and if there are more questions here, I'll bounce people toward the Etherpad or this chat room.
All right. Thank you.